So obviously joining us right now, somebody that has a huge platform. He's one of the largest live streamers on the planet. And certainly I have a lot of respect for him, and I always like picking his brain a little bit. And we're also going to be out there at Arizona State, flying out there on Sunday to have some good spirited debates. And I'm looking forward to joining me. He joins us right now on the program, known as Destiny. Destiny, it's good to see you, my friend. I appreciate you coming back on the show with me. How you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Doing good, man. Thanks for coming on. So much to get to with you, because so much has transpired since last time you and I spoke about this. I mean, we've heard like five or six different reasons as to why we went to war in Iran. And while you and I might disagree a little bit on Israel and the Israeli government, maybe we can get into that a little bit. What do you make of all the excuses from Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump? First, it's regime change. Then the civilians need to rise up. Then after we learn that, Marco Rubio, in a sense, says that Israel forced our hand. You know, then it's about nuclear capabilities. When we were told we obliterated them eight months ago. It's excuse after excuse after excuse. What do you make of this?
It's very hard to have a theory of mind for the current administration on a lot of things. My feeling right now is that Netanyahu told Trump that if he got rid of the Ayatollah, it would be like a great American president achievement and he would be super cool and it would help everybody. And Trump was like, okay, cool, let's go. As stupid as it is, that's just kind of my take on it. I can't think of any other. I don't know what else is going on. I can't.
I hear you, but let me give you a theory, because Lev Parnas brought this up to me a few weeks ago and it makes sense now. I mean, the two people that have benefited most from this, I would start with Vladimir Putin. When you look at the amount of money that they are making because of the oil reserves and this situation, Vladimir Putin has benefited a great deal from this. I think you would agree with me on that. And I think Benjamin Netanyahu has certainly benefited from this as well. But let's start with Putin. Would you agree with me that this war so far, at least, has been very beneficial to him financially?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard this a lot, and I'm going out on a limb here because I don't hear other people do this analysis much, so I could be totally wrong. Like it's going to help in the short term in terms of being able to sell energy at higher prices, for sure.
Yeah.
But in the long term, man, poor Vlad has lost a lot of friends in the Middle East, right? Like, Assad is gone. That was a close, very close friend to Russia. And now the Ayatollah, I guess, is gone, or whatever parts of it keep coming up, keep disappearing. So with Iran and with Syria out of the picture for Russia, does Russia even have, do they have any foothold in the Middle East at all anymore? Or is that region now just completely abandoned to I guess, the West now, whatever the West is or will be after this regime change happens or doesn't happen or whatever? I don't know what's going to end there. Yeah.
What do you make, though, of the reports that came out that, and even the White House has pretty much admitted this, that Putin and his regime have shared intelligence with Iran, putting our troops in harm's way, and Donald Trump pretty much shrugs his shoulders. Oh, well, he shouldn't do that. I'll talk to him. You know, I mean, what do you make of that? Because that's already been confirmed.
I mean, as the U.S. president, as the leader of your country, you're not supposed to say that. But I mean, that realistically, this is kind of what happens. You're going to be intelligence sharing with allies, even if it puts U.S. troops in harm's way. That's always going to be the case. But there's supposed to be a public song and dance about that, where Trump is supposed to chide Putin and say something or do something or whatever. But I mean, like, that's, I think that's kind of to be expected. Yeah. It's not like Russia can help out much in many other ways right now. So, yeah.
That's true. I mean, what did it surprise you, this guy stepping down, his resignation, basically saying that Iran is not an imminent threat, which obviously I agree with. I would imagine you would as well. Did that surprise you at all that he did this? Because this is a guy who is a huge Trump guy. He's got white supremacist tendencies and a history. He's anti-Semitic comments he's made. This is a crazy lunatic. But did it surprise you that he stepped down and made that statement public?
Are you talking about Joe Kent?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. You asked me these questions. Does it surprise me? I don't know if anything would surprise me at this point. Trump could threaten to use a nuclear bomb right now. And, you know, is it surprising? There are different factions. One of the games that you play, one of the deals with the devil you make when you have such a wide tent of different people, as long as they all support Trump, is you get a lot of different ideas floating around that are mutually exclusive of ideas. So like Tulsi Gabbard and other people who ended up joining this new right-wing movement were quite isolationist in nature. So when Trump said, I'm the president of no new wars, you know, you've got the voter base that'll go along with him on almost anything. But the ideological people, or the ideologically driven people that are part of his cabinet or part of his new team, not all of them are willing to go along in that direction. So it doesn't surprise me that he's picked up people that have strong disagreements with him. I feel like Tulsi Gabbard is another one who doesn't want war with Iran and doesn't want the United States blowing everybody up and kidnapping everybody. So it's not the most surprising thing in the world. Yeah.
What did you make of Tulsi Gabbard's testimony? Because she obviously wants to toe the line. She doesn't want to upset dear leader Trump. But at the same time, you know, she eluded certain questions and she was obviously not willing to say under oath that Iran is or was an imminent threat. Very similar to the words that she used 10 months ago before we bombed them, What did you make of that testimony?
So I haven't watched the full thing yet, but I've seen a couple 10-minute, like I watched Ossoff's questioning of her. And my impression from that was that Tulsi was completely and totally throwing the White House under the bus. It sounded like the way that she was answering was, because, you know, I try to point this out to my audience. It's not so much what she says, it's sometimes it's what she doesn't say. We've watched enough of these congressional hearings now. When somebody asks you a question, right? Can you imagine if Pam Bondi is there and, you know, Ossoff asks, well, didn't you guys say that you completely obliterated Iran's nuclear stockpile? Like, if Bondi is answering that question, she's scrambling to pivot and diverge. Like, well, we said we blew it up, but, you know, there's always a little bit left and you don't know, they could rebuild and, you know, maybe they've still got this hidden and it's essential. But Tulsi was incredibly, like, forthcoming and very short on every answer she gave and right to the point. Yes, we blew it all up. Yes. Did we destroy everything? Yes. Did we obliterate their capabilities? Yes. And it was very short on everything. And then when it came time for the question where everybody's trying to crucify Tulsi on this, and I'm all in favor of crucifying Tulsi and on anything, but you know, when Ossoff is asking her, well, who determines if it's an imminent threat? This is the job, obviously, of the intelligence community. But for her to say, oh, that's left to the big guy in the White House, is she's basically completely throwing the responsibility of initiating this war solely on Donald Trump, which I think is a really big deal. Yeah.
I didn't really think of it like that. And you're actually right. She bore the, put the responsibility on Trump. She's basically saying, hey, here's our intelligence. Here's what we were told. But it's up to the president to decide. So you're right about that. Let's talk a little bit about gas prices.
I don't want to say real quick on that, too, because I listened to that also thing. And I'm right after we finish the show, I'm going to listen to this whole thing because I now really want to hear everything she said. The FBI stuff with Fulton County was really crazy, too. One thing that I'm kind of familiar with over the J6 stuff is you don't really have to say, it seems like you don't have to say much, especially in front of Congress, about your communications with the president. They always exert this like, I have executive privilege, I don't blah, 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 blah. Tulsi Gabbard was like, he told me to fly out to supervise that the same day the warrant was served. I was there because the president told me to be there. He commanded it. He told me, he said on his own for me to go. That's pretty crazy. There, she's throwing a lot of weight and a lot of sole responsibility onto Trump there to make it seem like he did not have the support of the intelligence community or anybody else behind him when he was making these decisions, which is, in my opinion, is a pretty big deal.
Agree. And in that testimony, she was asked, well, were you a part of this investigation? Because they talked about why they were there. And it appears that the only reason why they were there was conspiracy theories, all these conspiracy theories that were unproven. They shouldn't have even been there. Yeah. And then her response was, well, I was just there to observe. I wasn't a part. What do you mean you were there to observe? Who asked you to do that? Well, Donald Trump asked me to do that. Well, why? Why did he ask you to do that? Why were you there? You're not supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is so absurd. And you'll watch the rest of it, but it is mesmerizing. Let's talk a little bit about gas prices. You know, Destiny, I use the term hypocrisy a lot with these MAGA Republicans. So as you know, during the Joe Biden administration, we got into this, well, we didn't, but Putin invades Ukraine, a new war. That affects gas prices. We're coming out of a global pandemic. But everybody on the right blamed Joe Biden for gas prices. By the way, Joe Biden didn't start the pandemic, and Joe Biden didn't start a war with Ukraine. Donald Trump started a war with Iran. Uh-huh. You see what's happening to these gas prices now. This was a choice that Donald Trump made with no contingency plan, nothing. And then I hear from these MAGA Republicans and elected officials, well, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. Be a patriot. That moron, Michelle Tafoya, yesterday said, it's patriotic to spend $5 a gallon for gas. Are you kidding me? My head's going to explode. What do you make of the hypocrisy? And if somebody in the Biden administration made a statement like that?
I mean, it's funny that you say they didn't have a contingency plan for the Iran stuff. They didn't have a plan. I don't think they had any plans at all. Like the idea. Yeah, I don't know, man. I can't believe that they would, you know, be mining up the Strait of Hormuz and they'd be attacking other players in the region when we're trying to do an existential regime change on the entire country. Yeah. I can't believe that they would be fighting back. It's like, what do you think is going to happen? I don't think when it comes to like, it's just the level of salience of gasoline prices is too high. You drive to buy gas stations every day. You go and you fill your tank up. You see the gas price go up. There's no way that you can obfuscate that to the American public. I don't think that even his fan base or supporters will bear that for months and months, let alone the moderates or the Republicans that aren't fully bought into MAGA, let alone those people that you would need to sustain any of your electoral viabilities. You know, like we're talking about the Senate, the polymarket odds might have switched actually. Is it in favor now for the Democrats to win the Senate? Or if not, it was like 50-50 last I checked.
I think they might have a slight edge.
Like, geez, how much have you messing up real bad at that point? Like, this wasn't even supposed to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't know, you remember the moment where Donald Trump was wearing his baseball cap that he's selling on his website for $55 when these brave men and women, sadly, are coming home in caskets. And then he actually tried to fundraise off of that. Well, he didn't try. He did. He fundraised off of a dead soldier. And you recall, again, hypocrisy, when Joe Biden looked at his watch for a half a second, right? A half a second when this, you know. And by the way, he would look at his watch. That was like a, almost like a nervous tick. Like, he did that everywhere. And MAGA Republicans still talk about that moment. And then Fox News shows old footage of Donald Trump, not at that ceremony, or for lack of a better term. What do you make of that? He wears a hat because he doesn't want his hair to go all over the place when it's windy outside. But yet MAGA Republicans aren't, again, they're not talking about that. They don't think it's a big deal, even though Fox News tried to hide it. And they still talk about a half a second when Biden looked at his watch.
I mean, there's obviously there's no decorum on the Republican side at all. These people are ghoulish. There's nothing more to be said about that. I mean, Biden has a family, children that served in the military. Am I making this up, or was the theory that, is it Bo Burnham that, did I just say Bo Burnham? Can you edit that out? I'm sorry. Was it Bo Biden? Was the idea that he might have died because of exposure to burn pits or something? Or
So that's exactly what happened.
Okay, yeah. And also keep in mind, Trump is a draft dodger. Right. Trump is a draft dodger. And so the idea that and also keep in mind that at this point, more people died in more American soldiers have died in Iran than died in that Afghanistan pullout. And I've heard about that for years. Where are our Benghazi hearings for Donald Trump, for any of the this guy just like moonwalks from one scandalous day to the next? And I think you said at the beginning of this convo, like, wow, you know, we haven't spoken in a while and so much has happened. When you say we haven't spoken in a while, we could just not speak for 7 days and so much would happen. I don't even know if the last time I spoke to you, if Maduro had been captured or deposed yet. I'm not sure how long. Just everything. It's just, man, it's just so much.
Yeah, and you're right. Bo Biden died. He had brain cancer, and there are other soldiers, sadly, from those burn pits. And then Joe Biden is accused of saying that he died service, and they attack him for that when it's obviously that's been proven. And you're right. Donald Trump is a five-time draft dodger, you know, suckers and losers. I don't respect John McCain because he was captured. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I have to ask you a little bit about Mark Wayne Mullen.
I'm glad you brought that up. The guy that went on the ultra super duper secret mission that's so ultra duper super secret that nobody can know who even made it ultra super duper secret. That Paul had said that they had asked like the CIA, the FBI, and everybody. Nobody has a record of this ultra super duper hyper secret mission.
I know, and he was asked about that too. What an idiot. So first of all, here's a guy, as you know, who took over his father's plumbing business, and I have respect for blue collar workers and plumbers. I'm not attacking them. But is this the guy you want to hear talk about foreign policy? You know, I mean, it's just the guy who helped make sure that your toilet flushes. I'm just saying, okay, I'm just going to throw that out there, number one. And number two, this is the guy who challenged somebody to a physical altercation in the House chambers. This is a guy who has been hit in the head way too many times. I actually think that he is more of a threat leading DHS, if he's appointed, than Kristi Noem was, and she was a complete disaster.
This might be an unpopular take. I think he's more qualified than Kristi Noem, but I will never get over her being asked what habeas corpus was and not having an answer to that. That's unbelievable to me. The head of DHS just not having an answer to that. He seems to at least know like the basic law, the process of procedure more. I've heard it said, I don't know if this is true or not, that he's the only member of Congress that hasn't graduated college. So education level might not be the best there, but I'm all in favor of Democrats, you know, mucking up as much as they can the nomination process or doing whatever they can to slow this administration down. But I would say that the big problem with DHS is probably not Kristi Noem. It's not going to be Mullen. It's going to be the directives coming down from the president. So it's not like there's a good person they're going to nominate for that, because no matter who they put there, they're going to want them to carry out their completely and totally unhinged mission for everything.
Yeah.
Thank God, we have brave souls like Fetterman to make sure that he gets out of committee, though. Thank you. Wow.
What do you make? Let me ask you about him for a minute, because Destiny, as you recall, when he had a stroke, I, like many others, were defending him when people on the right were calling him a vegetable. I did not know a lot about him, as I've learned more about him over the years. Here's a guy who never really had a real job in his life. He comes from a very wealthy family. He looks like a blue collar worker. He's not. He became mayor. And he has this stroke. The guy has zero work ethic. He dresses like a slob. I thought I dressed like a slob. The guy dresses like a slob. I didn't know strokes turned you into right-wing radical MAGA Republicans. But what the hell? I guess my question is, what the hell has happened to this guy? Or was he always like this?
I can't speak to that either. I have no idea. I feel like you could put this guy like a into a classroom with a bunch of psych students and do like a split brain experiment on him. And when they go to test the other side of the brain, he just dies because it's just not there. I like, this guy is phenomenal to me. Like, I spoke about this earlier, like for Manchin and Sinema, like these are people who were essential swing votes in highly contentious or completely lost to the Senate, like West Virginia. There's no other Democrat going there besides Manchin. Like, you need these people. And so they had a lot of political capital as a result of that. But like Fetterman, senator from Pennsylvania, like I know it's a contentious area, but like this guy is, and Fetterman's not even like, it's not like the Republicans just need his one vote in the entire Senate. And so he's like so politically important. He just like, he hates on Democrats for the love of the game. How do you get this guy walking around saying like Trump derangement syndrome, or like, I'm the only Democrat that wants to fund DHS. And I think I'm the only Democrat that doesn't want open borders. And it's like, oh my God, bro. You're like, your skull is literally open right now. Like, come on.
It seems like he's on Fox News every day. Like, yeah. That's his job. He just makes his appearances on Fox News, and they love him. Fox News and right-wing media love him because then, you know, he'll attack Democrats, and they eat that alive.
He's the new era's like Tulsi Gabbard or RFK Jr. Yeah. When you ask a Joe Rogan type, like, do you like anybody on the left? And they're like, of course I do. I've got lots of leftist friends. Like John Fetterman is like, he's one of those types of people.
Yeah, he is one of those people. You're right about that. I do want to ask you about the SAVE Act. Now, as you know, that there are a lot of Republicans out there that are claiming, you know, this bill is all about voter ID. Now, as you know, there's a lot of other areas in the SAVE Act. It's not just about that. But I get into these debates and arguments, for lack of a better term, with MAGA Republicans. And I always ask them the same question. How many undocumented immigrants have voted in the last 10 or 15 years? And as you know, Turning Point even put out these statistics. Less than 100 undocumented immigrants have been proven to have voted illegally in the last decade. This is not an issue. Why have MAGA Republicans made this an issue?
I mean, this is a Mott and Bailey in a way. Like, the easily defensible position is some kind of ID required to vote is probably okay. There are a lot of countries that do it. Like, if we had an ID that was easily accessible, that, you know, did discriminate against certain types of people, that didn't have like a 7-week waiting period to get or whatever, I could be on board with this. I almost think that Democrats should try to compromise with this and asking for something big in the future. Like, we're going to do a national ID so that we can have voter ID or whatever. I'd almost be okay with that. But like, these requirements of like, if your name is different than your birth certificate, you've got to bring along some, first of all, how many people have their birth certificate, that you have to bring along some other form of identification. So every married woman, Hispanic people that for whatever reason hyphenate 50 million last names, like all these people are gonna have to have all these different, it's obviously there just to throw up roadblocks to get certain types of people not to vote. And I think any good faith actor, when they look at it, can see that that's exactly what's going on. And this isn't even touching the whole, which I never want to hear for the rest of my life, the whole states' rights issues of states have the right to determine how they do their voting place, you know, time, manner, and place, and all this. This is up to the states to figure out. The idea that they'd be okay with the federal government coming in, and now Republicans are like, well, yeah, the federal government can dictate to us everything for how we register our voters, and we'll give our voter rolls to them, and we'll let ICE come in and bully people. That's also ridiculous to me. But I guess states' rights only matter when it's things that you either agree with or things that don't matter, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. You know, I just wanted to ask you about this because it does appear as though there's a lot of infighting, as you know, these days between MAGA. For example, Megyn Kelly saying that Mark Levin has a mushroom penis, and then you have the Groypers, and you have, you know, people that are anti-Iran war, pro-Iran war. And then you have the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world and others. What do you make of that? And what do you make of where the Republican Party is at right now? Because at least in my estimation, the war certainly hasn't helped. They seem to be very divided on a number of different issues.
I mean, I've said the writing's been on the wall for this for a few years since the election. And then the writing, I think if you're paying attention, right, it's a cult. And when I say it's a cult, what I mean is it really is centered on Donald Trump himself. Like, it is the Donald Trump movement. So everybody knows that when Donald Trump recedes, there's going to be this huge vacuum. And because it's a cult, because it's built around Donald Trump, you're not here because you have like a consistent set of principles or values, right? We can talk about hypocrisy literally all day. You know, we can talk about one of the largest kinds of new tax expanses ever has been a tariff that Republicans all championed, or the Donald Trump banned bump stocks for gun reform. We can go thing after thing after thing. All the massive new debt that I think what the DOD is begging for another $200 billion, which I don't know why we need, because I thought Trump said that he rebuilt the whole military in his first term, but maybe Biden destroyed it in one term. I don't know. That's why we need peace in the Middle East for the fifth time, I guess, because everybody keeps ruining it. Just when you have a coalition of people brought together like this that don't have a common shared principle foundation, then it makes sense that as soon as the leader starts to recede, now everybody's individual ideologies are starting to show. And you've got people with a huge set of disagreements with each other over policy, over ideology, yeah, over, you know, American ideas, everything else. So, yeah, it seems pretty natural, yeah, that this would happen.
So I think we pretty much agree on, for the most part, everything that we've discussed. We might disagree on this. You know, I am pro-Israel, Destiny. I am, in a sense, anti-Israeli government. And I think Benjamin Netanyahu is corrupt. And I think he does what's good for Benjamin Netanyahu, maybe not always what's good for his people. And I don't believe we would be in a war in Iran right now if not for Benjamin Netanyahu using Donald Trump as his puppet. I really do believe that. I don't think Netanyahu's done a good job protecting his people. He certainly didn't during those Hamas attacks. I don't put all the responsibility on him. But I look back to the war in Iraq when we were told weapons of mass destruction under the George W. Bush administration. A part of that, quote unquote, faulty intelligence was from the Israeli government as well. I am anti-Israeli government. I am pro-Israel. Israeli people are wonderful people. I want them to be free. I want them to be safe. You won't see me crying for the Ayatollah. You won't see me feeling bad for what was an evil regime. But the problem is now there's another evil regime in there. I don't know. I'm just not a very pro Benjamin Netanyahu guy. I think he has a lot of characteristics very similar to Donald Trump. That's my personal opinion. What are your thoughts on that?
I hate talking about the Middle East ever. I hate anything having to do with the Middle East because it hijacks so much of our discourse in the United States. I hated a lot of the ultra rabid pro Palestinian far left people because a lot of the criticisms and things that they talk about when it comes to Israel are just not quite true. And a lot of the criticisms that they give to U.S. leadership is not quite true. So Israel historically, like the thing that people need to understand about the country of Israel is that if a guy walked into a room with a huge delicious Kit Kat bar, like the country of Israel is not going to walk up to the dude and beat him up to take the candy bar. But if the guy goes to the bathroom, they will absolutely sneak and take the candy bar and eat it all before he gets back. Israel is like very opportunistic in that way. And that if they see an opportunity, then they'll take it. And holy Jesus, Arabs in the region will never falter when it comes to giving Israel opportunities to do crazy things. One thing that people don't realize was how much restraint the liberal administrations especially kind of placed on Israel when it comes to how they function for specific examples, like, you know, that there was going to be a huge assault in Rafah that Biden slowed down considerably to make sure that like 1 million people were evacuated out of there before the IDF moved in and you know, started blowing stuff up again. Or at the beginning of the war, I think there was a 4 or 5 day ceasefire. There was a halt before airstrikes began to allow some people to move to camp so that it wouldn't have been as disastrous for civilian life as possible. People seem to think that like Republicans and Democrats are the same when it comes to Israel, but that's not true. I wouldn't even say Republicans and Democrats. The problem is that Trump just has no mind for the Middle East, and he's so easily manipulatable. And Israel, historically, and under Netanyahu, has zero consideration for the political realities of other world leaders. So if Netanyahu thinks that he can get something from Trump, he'll get it. I wouldn't even say that Trump is a puppet because that implies some level of manipulation. You don't really have to manipulate Trump. You just have to like kind of buddy up to him and say, this would be epic if we did this, and now we have epic fury or whatever for Iran. So yeah, I think the issue is Trump can't say no to Netanyahu because he probably lied to him about getting a Nobel Peace Prize or something for killing the Ayatollah and beating up Iran would be cool. And Trump's been talking about it for a long time. And he'll basically go along with whatever he says. Like in the short term and maybe even the long term, the war is going to be super beneficial to Israeli interests. But also Israel doesn't care if they're handcuffed to the U.S. anyway. The far right people in Israel want to lose that association because they view it as golden handcuffs because they've been restrained by so many prior administrations. So if this causes a breakup in relations between Israel and the U.S., like think about it. Israel eliminated almost every single major enemy they had in the region. Hamas is gone. The Hamas leadership is gone. Hezbollah is gone. Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, is gone. Assad is gone. They're bombing Beirut now. The Ayatollah is gone. Like every major enemy in the region is gone. They got like every possible thing they wanted. Like this would be the best time for their far right people to split from the United States and to now, you know, embark on their own mission and do what they want.
You would think. Yeah, I think for the most part, we agree on that. A question, one more question about the Middle East, and then we'll let you go here. But the school children, over 175 of them, young girls between the ages of 7 and 11 who were...
I was so angry when I heard that because it was Iran hijacked. They stole one of our Tomahawk missiles and shot it at their own school, I think, right? Is what the U.S. president said?
Correct. And Pete Hegseth holds this press conference and he's so stupid and incompetent, he doesn't even realize that the target that he's showing is right next to the school. That's how stupid these people are. And then when he was questioned about that, you have Donald Trump, you know, Hegseth didn't say it was Iran, but he didn't say it was the U.S. either, even though at that point he knew it was the U.S. And then Donald Trump says maybe it was Iran when Iran doesn't even own Tomahawk missiles. He doesn't even own. It's such an easily proven lie. But yet Donald Trump immediately blames Iran, and he has yet to apologize because he doesn't apologize for anything. And then we wonder why some of these people hate America when these young girls were murdered. And I understand horrible mistakes, sadly, are made in war. And I also would say that, you know, innocent people die in war. I didn't want this war to happen. But what do you make of the way the White House has responded to this? I have yet to hear an apology.
I mean, there won't be an apology. I have yet to hear an apology from this administration. What, like, we're showing videos and bragging about blowing people up, you know, in the ocean that we haven't shown any due process or warrants or anything for. I think, didn't we just blow up three more people? Or I think we blew up their boat, but I don't think we killed the people off the coast. Yeah. Yeah, there's not going to be any apology. This administration is shameless, and it's just trudging from one day to the next, from one horrific thing to the next, from one war to the next, from the president of peace and the Department of War to the next regime change. Like, I don't know. I hope at one point listen, I'll forgive 20% of this if he can just show the same energy towards Putin, okay? I'll forgive like 20% of this.
He won't. Yeah, he won't. You know, it's interesting because I was debating somebody the other day about this, and not to go back to Kamala Harris, but a lot of MAGA Republicans that I talk to, even some people that I speak to on a regular basis, I'm like, don't you regret your vote? And some people, not all, but some people still say, no, Kamala would have been worse. And I say to myself, correct me if I'm wrong, Destiny, she wouldn't have started an ill-advised war. She wouldn't have rolled out the red carpet for Vladimir Putin. She wouldn't have stolen $175 billion from the American people when it comes to these stupid tariffs that have ruined the economy. She wouldn't have given the top tax breaks to the top 1% of $100 billion. There's so many things I could say that she wouldn't have done and things she would have done. She wouldn't have taken 20 million people off of health care coverage and taken millions of people off of food stamps. I mean, these are pretty basic, important things that Kamala would not have done. And I just think we would have been in a much, not that Kamala's perfect, but we would have been in a much better situation as far as our economy goes if Kamala had won the election.
We would have been in a much better situation as far as literally everything goes. Yeah, it's no question. I don't buy that. Somebody made a post on my subreddit the other day, and I agreed with them. It's not enough if you're talking to, especially another content creator, influencer, but even to an individual, when they're like, man, I don't know, I kind of regret voting for Trump. I don't care if you regret voting for Trump. I need to hear you say that Kamala would have been a better president. That's what I need. Until you're ready to say that, you've not truly understood the despair that you have thrown this country into. Like, by the end of the first Trump term, I was like, man, like, I thought it was going to be really bad. It was kind of worse than I thought in some ways, especially after the January 6th stuff. This term, like, we're a year and 2 months in. Like, it's just, like, there's nothing that he could do that would even be surprising anymore. The thing that surprised me the most, he hasn't saber-rattled over nuclear weapons yet. I'm surprised I haven't heard Trump threaten to nuke anybody. I don't know why he hasn't. Like, it's just unbelievable.
I'm sure it's coming. How do you deal with these people on the far right that say that the misogyny, I mean, I get it. I won't even mention names, but there's some people that I've debated recently that think women should be in the kitchen and they shouldn't be allowed to have careers and they shouldn't be allowed to run for office. I was debating one guy last week. I'm not even going to mention his name because he's such a clown. But he made the statement that, well, women are too emotional. And then I looked at him and I said, you voted for Trump. He has nicknames for people that he disagrees with. You couldn't find a more insecure person, an emotional person, than Donald Trump, who puts on 8 layers of orange makeup every day. Like, how do you deal with these people who are misogynist? You get it all the time. You're one of the more popular people that share your views that are similar to mine. They'll call you homophobic slurs, right? They'll call you, you know, other words that I can't say on the air. And they have no real arguments. Do you just ignore it? Do you just laugh at it? Because that's a large base of these people. This is who they are. And they can't defend the indefensible. And a lot of these people I find to be, it's part of the culture of MAGA Republicans. I find them to be extremely misogynistic.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Let them do it. Women are some of your most important activated, like, voter related people in terms of, like, doing on the ground work for volunteering and everything. If you're not going to have women as part of your movement, then we'll take them as voters. Let them be as misogynistic as they want. Like, you've seen these divides historically where women have kind of broken off of these movements because of how insanely misogynistic, like, you know, even as a white Southern woman, you can only tolerate so many times Andrew Tate is being held up as the model man. And yeah, you know, if you want to exclude half the population or 52% or whatever from your political movements, I mean, be my guest.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. Well, Destiny, hey, it's going to be fun. I look forward to seeing you at Arizona State. We're going to be debating some people. It's going to be fun. I always look forward to it.
On the 23rd, right?
Yeah, I believe. The 21st is Saturday, right? Yes, on the 23rd, I'm flying out there on Sunday. And I guess we're going to be out there with the tent and we're going to be having fun. And I look forward to it, man. Always fun watching you debate and to be able to be there next to you and debating with you. I'm really looking forward to that, man, because I think I'm saying this sincerely. I think you're one of the best. I think you're one of the best.
Well, I am the best, but, you know, I'll take one of the best.
But you know what? The hate that you get. Before I let you go, you know, I was actually talking to somebody in Tim Pool's crew, believe it or not, about this. Uh-huh. And I said, because you deal with this every day. Uh-huh. I said, and as I'm nowhere near the following that you have, but as my show gets a little bit more popular, as the days go by and more people want to debate me, I get the homophobic slurs, I get the retard stuff and all these other words that are used on social media. And I said, man, these people are brutal. And this woman says to me, she says, if they weren't doing that, you would be doing something wrong. The reason why they're so angry at you and they hate you is because you're a threat to them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. This is why when you look at the very, very far left people, like your Hassan Pikers and everything, these guys are, in a way, these guys are like controlled opposition. They don't really get that same type of hate or that same type of threat. And they spend most of their time fighting with the left that also won't attack them in that type of way. And the reason why is because the conservatives like to have those people in existence because they can just use them as kind of like props every now and then to attack the broader left-wing movement in the United States. So, yeah, I mean, I also feel good because when I see people throwing those types of insults at me, it means that they have nothing of substance to critique me on. So, you know, in some ways, I'm really disappointed by some of the debates I've had. My Norman Finkelstein one comes to mind. But like if I was sitting across the table from supposedly one of the Western preeminent scholars on Israel-Palestine, and this guy, on the few facts that he tries to challenge me on, he's incorrect and he spends the rest of the time screaming names at me. I don't know. I consider that kind of funny. I feel like it kind of vindicates my position a little bit if that's the most you could bring to that conversation. So when you see people say things like that to you, you better believe that if you were wrong on the facts, they would be pounding the facts. But they're not able to do that, so they call you names instead. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Brian, you were dog walked. Oh, Brian, you were cooked. Oh, really? How? Why? Why? Because somebody says a woman shouldn't be allowed to vote, that somehow I was cooked. I mean, again, these people are extremely difficult to take serious. Destiny, you're certainly one of those guys that should be taken seriously. And I look forward to seeing you out there on Monday at the Arizona State campus with the NF America Tour. And I always appreciate it when you take the time to join us and your large listenership to be a part of your platform, too. I certainly appreciate that. We'll see you out there, my friend. Safe travels and look forward to hanging.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'll chat with you 3 wars from now, I guess. Have a good one, man.
Yeah, probably. Have a good one, Destiny. Take care, my friend. That's Destiny, everybody. And he has an enormous
dick. That's what he was going to say next.